You see, the mind works in sequences, routines, habits. That's how the mind works. And one of the games that the mind plays is what's missing in this sequence. And then we try to fill in the sequence. So the sequence is normally asana, book rest, cup of water, microphone. But this morning the sequence was disturbed. Chair. And then suddenly everybody went blank. I said, chair, this is a different sequence. My mind can't cope. What am I going to do? A microphone? Does he need a microphone? Maybe not. Maybe he's someone who can project his voice. Ventriloquist. The mind works in sequences. So part of Krishna consciousness is anticipating the sequence of the mind and stifling it when we don't want it to follow to the end of the sequence and creating a new sequence. It's called the Krishna conscious sequence. And it goes like this. Wake up, shower, japa, deity greeting, class, breakfast. That's the sequence. As soon as that's disturbed, we have problems. We have devotees here who have been here for 3 years. And then they suddenly decide, it's time for me to go home. I'll go home, get on with my education, go on with career. And suddenly that sequence is disturbed. Nothing happens at 7 o'clock. Nobody rings a bell, blows a conch, stands in the corner of the room and goes, Jaya, Jaya, Radha, go, go. No, so the sequence is destroyed. And thereby Krishna consciousness is disturbed. So we have to have our internal sequence. And the internal sequence is what will dictate our love for Krishna. So that is what we're talking about. We're talking about today, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Puri, where he lived for 12 years of his life in and around the room known as Gambira. So, Hare Krishna. It is my pleasure and my fear to be here this morning, because it would be easy if you had asked me to speak about the travels of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in South India. I would have given you a dialogue. I would have, a monologue, actually. I would have told you where the Lord went and the activities that he performed, the deities that he saw, and the devotees that he met. And it would all been very easy for me. But they've set me a very difficult task today, because we're not talking about the external journey that the Lord took, but the internal journey. And the internal journey is always a little harder. Out of the 48 years that Jai Kishore, out of the 48 years that Lord Chaitanya was in the world, 12 years were spent in the Gambira, 18 years in Jagannath Puri, a few years traveling, 24 years in Navadvip. And we've had a sequence of classes. What's tomorrow's class? There's Gopranim. Okay. I knew that. We have, Srila Prabhupada said, he said, learning is, I learned many things by watching, Prabhupada said one time. I learned many things by watching. I learned how to make fireworks, how to cook, and Prabhupada said, I learned how to knit. And Prabhupada could knit. Did you know that, Kishore? You didn't know that. It's a revelation. Once the GBC gets hold of this, it's going to change ISKCON forever. You thought he knew everything. You knew every Prabhupada story. Prabhupada knew how to knit. He learned by watching. So some of Lord Chaitanya's teachings come by teaching, verbal teaching. And some come by demonstration or by living example. It's interesting that often when we talk about the three ways that you can know anything, that you can substantiate anything, that you can find proof that something is real, and thereby truly learn it, we say pratyaksha, anuman, and shabda. Sense perception, inference or deduction, and expert verbal testimony, of which the supreme example is Shastra. But don't forget experts in the field. Madhvacharya, however, he says in one place, he says that actually, your own experience is the best form of praman. If you're actually experiencing something, is as incontrovertible. Now, normally, we in ISKCON, we like to say, don't trust the senses, etc., etc. But he's trying to make the point that just verbal jugglery, you say this, I say this, you say this, I say this, you say Vedas, I say Tantras, you say Agamas, I say Vedanta Sutra, it can go backwards and forwards, as it has done for 1,000 years or more. But Madhva, he also wants to break that by saying, look, experience, what you're experiencing is also really important, because that's the reality that you'll be working with, that you'll be working on. Yes, there's illusion, there's reality, you've got to separate the two, etc. So he says that, there's an interesting example where Prabhupada, he goes around the room and he's asking people, why are you still a devotee? Why are you still a devotee? And the devotees sort of go up to their height, you know, that they can manage, and they say, oh, because in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada says, Eti Changsa Pula Pung Sang Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam. Wait for the voice of approval from the spiritual master. And Prabhupada says, no. Because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is another way of saying the same thing. He says, no. Okay, now I'm really worried. You know, because Krishna says, Sarvasya Jaham Priti Sannivishto, he's the source of everything, he's in the heart, no. And everybody's flummoxed. What do you say to Prabhupada? And the devotee who'd been there for 6 weeks, he puts his hand up and he says, Prabhupada, he says, I'm still a devotee. He'd been there for 6 weeks. It is a fact, actually, when you've been a devotee for 6 weeks, that feels like a long time. Because the biggest decision that you make for Krishna consciousness is the one that you make in the beginning, isn't it? It's really like the greatest amount of fuel that an airplane uses is during takeoff. That's where all the fuel goes, because you just got to get lifted. So being lifted in Krishna consciousness in the first few weeks of your spiritual life, it's a big deal. So you really feel, I've surrendered. I've surrendered. I've been here for 6 weeks. I've been at the manor for 6 weeks. When did you surrender? Well, I surrendered 3 weeks ago. It just came to me that I should stay. So anyway, the devotee says, he said, I've been here for 6 weeks. He said, and I've stayed because I experienced Krishna. And Prabhupada said, yes, you've understood. You've understood. And really, that's what it's down to. We really like rules and regulations, and we like telling people that if you chant 9,400,562 rounds of japa, there will be a blinding light, and Krishna will be playing his flute in front of you. We like that, don't we? It's mechanical, and it's somehow predictable that if I just remain a devotee in the ashram, that's all I have to do. And then the ashram becomes the very measurement of your Krishna consciousness. Isn't it? It's like that. I'm in the temple. In the temple, dot, 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 the triangle dots. Therefore, I'm in the temple, therefore I'm a devotee, therefore I'm convinced, therefore I'm having a Krishna conscious experience. Therefore, I've almost perfected my life. And it goes on. I've taken sannyas, therefore I'm in this for life. There's no turning back now. This is it. I've made my vows. How many have made that vow and recanted that vow at a later stage? No. The solution is not making the vow on the outside or making the arrangement on the outside. That is a servant of the other journey that we must make, which is the internal journey. It's the internal journey. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu moved, and he moved as a preacher, he moved as a philosopher, and here he begins his, not begins, what am I saying, he's a Supreme Lord, but he's demonstrating a different type of journey. Why is it a different type of journey? Because he doesn't move anywhere, hardly. He's just in one room. But he's demonstrating a journey that took him from where he was situated to the highest platform of love of God. This is a thing. So Krishna consciousness is an experiential journey that takes place within you, actually. Within you. And we must always be checking, as sadhakas, whether the external journey is emblematic of the internal journey, or that the internal journey is catching up with the external journey. Because both may not go at the same speed. So, what do I want to tell you today? Well, you know all these things. But in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in Puri, as we heard from probably much more eloquently and with much more Sanskrit backing from Kartik Chandra Prabhu, was it yesterday or was it Saturday? He talked about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in Jagannath Puri. So he's entering into deeper and deeper states of consciousness. Now, all of this is really for your benefit. It's really for your benefit. It's not for, not so much for the people that were with him at the time. They were liberated souls who appeared with the Lord to enact his pastimes. It's for you. These pastimes are for you. They're a gift to all of us today, 500 years later, so that when we hear of them, we can try to do something with them. Now, these pastimes are so difficult to understand. They're almost impenetrable. Almost as impenetrable as the Gambhira room in which they took place. The Gambhira was, Gambhira means deep. This is a deep recess of a room, small room. Have you been there? You've seen that room. There's three locked doors. And then you get to the courtyard. So it's happening in a deep recess, deep interior practice. It's like a cave, actually. And so these are not only deep emotions that the Lord is demonstrating, deep realizations, but he's also doing another two things. He's showing deep demonstration of not only love for God, which will result in great joy. You love God, you become joyful. What does Prabhupada say? Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Well, here's Lord Chaitanya demonstrating something else. He's chanting Hare Krishna and he's being so unhappy that no one can assuage his grief, his feelings of love lost. To be in love is one thing, but to be love lost means that you've lost the love of your life. This is a terrible hammer blow to the self. So this is the experience that Lord Chaitanya is undergoing. How is that possible? I thought it was about chanting Hare Krishna and being happy, not chanting Hare Krishna and crying. Chanting Hare Krishna and being sad. But this is what he's showing is the result of Mahabhav, this experience, this Mahabhav, the greatest love. So there's a demonstration of that love in many ways. And Lord Chaitanya shows that this love, when experienced, almost not only breaks the heart, but it breaks the connections between every single part of your body and every single other part of your body. Mm-hmm. So his body contracts, his body expands, he's manifesting these different symptoms, which no one can really understand because no one has seen them before, neither have we seen them since. So Lord Chaitanya was oblivious to all externals in this state. And that's why it's difficult for us to understand, because for every activity that we as human beings want to perceive, we have an external correlation. Oh yes, I've been there. Yeah, you don't have to tell me, I've done that too. I've been in that state. But here, all the onlookers are looking at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and they're saying, what is this wonderful thing that we're seeing? We cannot possibly fathom this. We cannot understand. These emotions are so deep. The manifestation of that emotion is so strong that we have never been there. We've never seen about it. We've never seen it before. We've never heard it. You see? So this is the state of existence. But he's teaching through that the ultimate gift. Because Radharani's love for Krishna is the ultimate bhakti. So unless that's demonstrated, no one would have got it. People talk about bhakti. They do bhakti. But unless it's demonstrated in the highest possible way, no one will fully understand what it is. So he demonstrates that practically, physically. And this is the supreme gift that he'd come to give. The other thing he does in this room, of course, in the Gambhira, and make no mistake, is not that Lord Chaitanya sort of preached the Sankirtan movement. This is sometimes the critics of Srila Prabhupada, if we can call them that. The critics of Srila Prabhupada say, well, of course, obviously you understand that this Mahabhava is the highest, this is the pinnacle of Chaitanya's pastimes. Therefore, he only preached on a sort of external way. This is a lower activity than what he was experiencing. But that's not true. That's not true, because the Gambhira is also the room where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directed the preaching in all the different provinces of India. People came to see him from all over India, and he said, okay, this is what I want you to do. He was the regional supervisor, and this was, you got all the different parts of his region covered. They would come and he would give them directions and blessings. Firstly, they would come. That's a journey in itself. So when you journey, usually by cart or on foot, it's a long, long, long way, many, many weeks. But they would make that journey to come and see their Lord, sometimes with great physical hardship, sometimes with disease, they would come to see him. And he would look after them when they came. So it was, for them, it was reaching the spiritual world to come and see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a room where he was staying. So he would manifest not only love for God, but love for the devotees of God. And isn't that equally important? He would show, you are important, because as much as I am loving Krishna, I'm loving you, the devotees of Krishna. So in that room, devotees were fed, devotees were bandaged, devotees were healed, devotees were encouraged. And this is an important part of the transaction. But then after some days of blessing by teaching and kirtan, they were sent on their way with new instructions. So that all happened in the Gambhira as well. So don't think that it was all preaching, preaching, preaching. But then one day, we can give up preaching and just relish. Just relish. Here's me relishing. This is my symbol of relishing. I'm chanting, I'm relishing. And this is the highest possible thing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is demonstrating. No, it wasn't like that. Both. Just like our dear Tribhuvanath Prabhu, he'd received conflicting instructions, both apparently from Prabhupada. And the instructions were that he got in a letter that you should do festivals all over England. Do festivals, Hare Krishna festivals. I'm liking very much. Do these festivals. Carry on. And then also from Prabhupada, through sort of San Francisco and Los Angeles and New York, there was this new thing that Prabhupada apparently wanted, and it was called book distribution. So he got very confused. Should I, you can't do both really, can you? Because if you spend all your life doing books, then you can't do festivals, really. You're tired. You can't do festivals, you can't do books. So then on a morning walk, he asked Prabhupada, he said, Srila Prabhupada, should I give up festivals and just do book distribution? Because Prabhupada at that time was, Prabhupada put his cane down in the sand, and he turned around, and he pointed at him, he said, no. He said, do everything side by side. So this is the idea. You cannot stop anything. Internal, external, teaching and the preaching and the organizing and the management and the deity worship. Everything side by side. Because somebody's got to do it. Somebody has to do it. And if the Acharya isn't demonstrating. So here, the Acharya is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he's demonstrating all these things. So who did he worship? Where was the deity worship going on? We'll come to that in a little bit. But there's three events which, if we understand them, we can understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feelings. The first is demonstrated by this picture, one of my favorite pictures. Also the cover of a book called Bhakti Overview. Lord Chaitanya fell asleep and he had a dream. Can you see it or should I pass it around? It's a beautiful painting. I can pass it around as well. So it's a beautiful painting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell asleep, and in that dream, he felt that he was with Krishna and the gopis on the outskirts of the Rasa dance. Now, the Rasa dance is the pinnacle. The Rasa dance is the pinnacle, because it is the point at which Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna, is completely surrounded by concentric circles of gopis. Prabhupada said, he said, do not boycott the gopis. Because in many places, Prabhupada would often, he would act as a sort of, speed limiter, like on a vehicle. So on the vehicle of our Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada and his words were like a speed limiter. Don't go too fast. Don't try to understand. Or like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, how does that verse go? Pujala Ragapata Gaurava Bhangi. Always keep the rasa dance in front of you. No matter how much you move forward, always keep it in front of you and always keep it above you. Is it not that you will ever become an enjoyer of the rasa dance? Always keep it in front of you and above you. So Lord Chaitanya had this dream, and he felt that he was there. And then he woke up and he went to the Jagannath temple, and he saw Jagannath, and he saw Baladev, and he saw Subhadra. But instead of seeing them, instead of seeing the deity, he saw Vrindavan Krishna. And it was in that ecstasy that the lady, there was a lot of pushing and shoving. In Indian culture, is pushing and shoving, and sort of private space doesn't really come into it. You know, if someone's from Germany and they go to India, it's a very bad combination. They go, give me my space, give me my space, this is my space. No, there's no private space in India. So as it always was, as it always will be. So this lady, she had wanted to see Krishna, Jagannath, on the altar. And she climbed up the Garuda Stamba, and she even put her foot on the shoulder of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is a really enthusiastic lady. You think we have problems, boys, sometimes. The ladies want darshan. Right? So this, she really wanted darshan. She stood. Sorry, it was an old reference there. So she stood on his shoulder, and he looked, and he was so much absorbed in Vrindavan Krishna, he didn't even notice who it was. And the servant was aghast. He said, my lord, he said, get down, get down, get down. Who do you think you're standing on the shoulders of a sannyasi? Now, even in 2019, if we saw one of our ladies who was very enthusiastic to have darshan stand on the shoulders of a sannyasi, what do you think, Yogamaya? Do you think that would, you think that lady would survive? So what to speak of 500 years ago, when the codes of civil behavior were very clearly established. There was in the times when even a Brahmin should not be jostled by anybody. And for this reason, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was the chief pundit to the king, he had a tunnel built from his house to the Jagannath Puri temple. He wasn't a very tall man, so you can still go and see the tunnel today. He was only sort of 5 foot, and his shoes, little shoes. But he was walking through the tunnel, and this is secure. You don't get jostled by anybody. You don't get mugged. Very safe and secure. So just imagine, these arrangements were there for people of stature. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most famous sannyasi because he's taught Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So he goes to the temple and he gets jostled. So his servant, was it Govinda? His servant said, come down, woman. You don't realize what you're doing. And Lord Chaitanya was oblivious. He was in so much ecstasy. And so he pulled her down, and Lord Chaitanya noticed a kerfuffle, and he turned around and he said to his servant, you aborigine. He said, you aborigine. He said, what are you doing? You what was the word? Not anubhasha. Anubhasha? Anubhasha? Adivasya? Something like that. Adivasi is the word for aborigine. Yeah. But he said, you aborigine. He said, this woman has more enthusiasm to see Krishna than I will ever have. He began to become very upset. He said, why can I not have her enthusiasm? Why can I not have her enthusiasm? She's so enthusiastic to see Krishna. But because he became upset, he looked at the altar, and no longer was Vrindavan Krishna there, but Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra, and he went home. Anyway, the real thing here is that this emblem, which you will see everywhere, of Krishna dancing with the gopis in the circle dance under the moonlit sky, this is the very high point of his Vrindavan pastimes. And so it's the aspiration for every Vaishnava that we will be just at the very far end of the serving circles. You know, there's the servants, then there's the servants of the servants, and the servants of the servants of the servants, many times removed. But if we just get to do something, if we just get to do something. Yeah. It's like devotees are like that. We don't position ourselves very highly, but we position ourselves somewhere on the furthest concentric. But if we manage to do that, that is perfection for the devotee. So there's that emblem. The second emblem is, what is the second emblem? Well, the second emblem would be Krishna then leaving not only the rasa dance, but leaving everybody who took part in it. And that great departure by Lord Krishna on the chariot of Akrura, where he leaves and the gopis are following and trying to stop the horses. This Krishna is leaving us. This mood that we were with Krishna, now Krishna is leaving us. This is the next mood. And it never went away, of course. Krishna said, I will return. Krishna never returned. First he was in Mathura, and that was difficult enough for the gopis to countenance. Mathura's, I thought, when I heard about this for the first time, I thought, well, Mathura must be halfway to Dwarka. It must be a very, very long way away, because the gopis are so sad that Krishna's no longer there. Mathura's 8 miles away. You can walk it in a few hours. But still, Krishna just being so near and yet so far, this is a terrible thing, terrible thing. And this mood was, of course, emblemized by Madhavendra Puri as he was leaving this world. He also said, my dear Lord, he said, O Mathurapati, he said, I've been, where are you? I feel so bereft without your company. So Prabhupada one time, he was looking very grave, and devotees, he was very, very serious. And the devotees afterwards, they asked him, he said, Prabhupada, were you sad at that point? He said, sad? He said, that was my ecstasy. So he was teaching us the great sadness that I will never be a devotee. Oh, there's two things. There's just a devotee who's depressed, mentally depressed. And that's possible. It is possible to be mentally depressed as a devotee, and we always have to be serving and supporting each other and helping each other so that we don't become depressed. So there's that. That's a psychological state. So sometimes people say, well, I want to be lower than the straw in the street. Okay. But as a psychological adjustment, that doesn't really make it. Because feeling lower than the straw in the street has got nothing to do with psychology. It's got everything to do with spiritual progress. So if even for a moment or two you glimpse that I am nothing, actually, I'm not sure if even Krishna knows that I'm here, then that will be the greatest ecstasy for you, if it's genuine. How is that possible? Because that seems the very opposite. Seems the very opposite. If I feel very sad as a devotee, then I'm sad. But to be sad as an advanced devotee means to be happy. You see, you have to be prepared for these apparent contradictions. So, so this is this distance with Krishna, this vipralamba, this separation. The third is when Krishna's representative came back to Vrindavan to offer some comfort to the gopis. He wasn't Krishna, but he was Krishna's representative. And he was related to Krishna. He was the same bluish color. He was the same youthful countenance. His name was Uddhava. So then Uddhava came and he was talking to the gopis and bringing them messages from Krishna. And then Radharani began to exhibit these symptoms. Then she began speaking to a bumblebee. And it's in this conversation between Radharani and the bumblebee that we find the secret of the Gambira. The secret of the Gambira is there because it's simultaneous, kind of at the same time, in the same conversation, feeling closeness and separation. So this manifests in the body in different ways. Great tears, and at the same time laughter, and it seems as if the person has gone mad, or has become uncontrollably, emotional, because these emotions come one after the other. Now, normally, our emotional states come on a sort of, there's a few hours that we're sad, and then a few hours that we're happy, and then a few hours that we're, it's like that. It's sort of but a mad person is one whose emotional states can change in a few minutes. We call it bipolar, or where the brain can't possibly cope with the fluctuations of different symptoms. So looking at it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became a madman. But internally he was experiencing these moods. How do we know? How do we know he wasn't mad, as some university professors like to say? He was suffering from epilepsy. This was one, I won't mention his name, but one famous expert in the realm of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, not one of our people, but one of the secular people. He said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was obviously experiencing some fluctuation of mental states, therefore we can conclude that it must have been epilepsy, no other. Of course, now those experts are either very old, and they're giving way to our devotee experts from the Oxford Center for Hindu Studies, who are being shipped to different universities around the world, who are giving the much, much better and much deeper scholarly understanding of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu using the scriptures and using testimony and using expert witnesses that wrote diaries at the time. So when Uddhava came from Mathura, just listen to this. I've been to the place where this happened, so they told me at least. And it's in the 10th canto. You see, I've jumped immediately to the 10th canto. 47th chapter. So there's 90 chapters in the 10th canto, and we're somewhere near we're almost in the middle. So right at the heart of the 10th canto is this revelation. So immediately Radharani begins, she says, I'm just going to read through the statements, otherwise it's a very long section. You are a cunning friend of Uddhava and Krishna, she says to the bumblebee. I see the kumkum on your mustache. It obviously means you've been fraternizing with the girls of Mathura. Krishna is now flattering his new friends in Mathura. What is the use of your presence here? Why did you come? Why do you come just throwing yourself in our face if you're coming being decorated with kumkum from those other women that are getting Krishna's attention? And I see you. You're going from flower to flower. You're just like your master, Krishna. He's also going from girl to girl. I hear that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, still worships Krishna. But we're not unintelligent like her. I'm not unintelligent. Go and sing your songs in Mathura. Don't sing your songs. Stop buzzing. Don't buzz around me. Go back to Mathura and buzz. But Krishna must be sorry, isn't he? Krishna must be sorry not to see us. So the mood has changed immediately. She says, you're buzzing at my feet. I know why you're buzzing at my feet. You're asking for forgiveness. We gave up so much for Krishna, and now he forgets us. Let's just give up this relationship. So none of the anger's coming in. We did so much for you. I did so much for you. So many nights we danced together. I've done so many songs and I've cooked so many things. I made so many garlands, and now you just walk away. It's better we just forget this relationship. He's a cheat. And I tell you what, he's a cheat just like he cheated in all his other incarnations. He cheated as Ram. He cheated with Sopranak. She was a woman, and just see how he cheated her. Cut off her nose. Then he cheated Vali. He made friends with him, and then he killed him in battle. And then he cheated Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj surrendered to him and he took everything away. Just like he took everything away from us. He's a cheat. I'm just a simple girl. I'm just a simple bird that has heard the sweet flute of the hunter. And now my heart has been pierced by his arrow. So then the bee flies off. He says, good riddance. Good riddance. Go, go, go. And then he comes back. He says, you're Krishna's friend. He's ordered you to come back, has he? What do you want? Have you come to take us all to him? Doesn't he remember us at all? Did you ask him? Divine. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is nothing more, nothing less than Krishna in this mood of Srimati Radharani. He never shows himself in the color of Krishna or in the mood of Krishna. He's a bhakta of Krishna, but because he is Krishna, he's the best bhakta of Krishna, the best devotee of Krishna. And the best bhakta is Srimati Radharani. So Lord Chaitanya saw Krishna, and he entered into the pastimes of Krishna with the mood of Radharani in order to experience himself as only a devotee can experience. Krishna can do everything. Krishna can do everything, but there's only one thing that he can't do. What is that? What is it that Krishna can't do? He can't experience the love that you feel for him. So in order to experience the love of his devotees, he has to come in a different, in the mood of that devotee. So he comes. And he experiences the pangs of separation from Krishna. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes of these different emotions: jubilation, lamentation, anger, humility, anxiety, grief, eagerness, and satisfaction. So how do we know all these things? Well, there's two sources of information. That is the Hare Krishna. The diaries of Swarup Damodar. Swarup Damodar was formerly Purushottam Acharya in Navadvip, and he came to be with Lord Chaitanya and became his most intimate servant. And the servant of Swarup Damodar was Raghunath Das Goswami. So Swarup Damodar kept a diary, but he wrote very short notes. He kept very short notes, very brief notes. He was a diarist, but he kept them short. And then Raghunath Das Goswami got the explanations. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, "I'm like taking a giwik that's been rolled into a ball, and I'm teasing it out, I'm fluffing out the cotton." So Swarup Damodar Goswami has given me something short, Raghunath Das, and I'm pulling it out. So the interesting thing is that this Gambira room where all of this happened was it was the house of Kashi Mishra. Now, King Prataparudra, his father was also known as Purushottam Acharya, but Purushottam Dev. And a wedding had been arranged. And when a wedding is arranged between two kings, this was the king of Kanchipuram. And he arranged a wedding. And then when he got there, Purushottam Dev was snubbed. "No, I've changed my mind. His daughter is no longer available." He went home, gathered his army, and he came back and he gave battle. Unfortunately, he was defeated in battle. So then he came back and his court philosopher said to him, "Well, did you get Jagannath's blessings before you went?" He said, "Oh, I forgot." Became so angry. You see, that's ordinary psychological anger. So he took Jagannath's blessings, and again he went, and he defeated the king of Kanchi. And when he was there, he, of course, what a defeat, what an attacking army does is they bring back some loot. And among the loot was three deities. One was Sakshi Gopal, one was Buddha Ganesh, who is still there at the back of the altar in the Jagannath Puri temple. I have not seen him. I'm a white man. I've never been there. But the... Did you go in? You managed to get in. See? Very good. In my next life, I will be like him. So then there was Radhakanta, Krishna and Radhakanta. So then after some time, the deity worship had been going on in the temple, the king, and now it was the king was Prataparudra, and there was a dream. Lord Jagannath came to the king in a dream and said, you have to get rid of this Krishna. He said, all the best bits of the offering he's taking before it comes to me. So you must worship him somewhere else, not in my temple. So the king woke up, and then he said, okay, what am I going to do? We've invited Krishna. We've installed him here. What am I going to do? So he went to Kashi Mishra, and Kashi Mishra said, I'll look after him. And so that is how Radhakanta and Vishakha and Lalita came to Kashi Mishra's house. And where the deities are is just over the way from the Gambira, and Lord Chaitanya would see them every day. Later on, they were worshipped by Vakreshwara Pandit, who also had his own sampradaya. So then when you go to that place, it's that sampradaya who's looking after the deities. Now, how does that work? Why didn't the disciples of Kashi Mishra look after the deity? Well, the tradition in those days was disciples may come and go. There may be some calamity. But your children and your children's children, you know, your children's children's children, they'll still be in the house. Like, I went to someone's house. He said, why don't you come back to my house? I can tell you more about the deity. I said, okay. And I was looking around the house, and I said, it looked like a very old house. All the walls are made of granite. And I said, how long have you been living here? He said, well, my family came here in about 1210 A.D. I said, your family's been living here since the 1200s. These days, we run with the concept that I have a house, I die in the house, and my children fight over the house. But in those days, the conception was you hand on the property to your children, their children, their children. So if you have a deity in the home, and what is happening now, of course, is that you have many, many deities, and sometimes, unfortunately, they're uncared for, but they've been there since the 12, the 11, the 1000s in some cases. You go to Sri Rangam, and sometimes the deity is there in someone's home, and it's been worshipped for more than 1,000 years. And sometimes the features of the deity are all worn down. But the family would, this is our deity, this is our family deity. So this is one way of looking after the deities. But Kashi Mishra, he said to Lord Chaitanya, please give me the benediction that I will never, ever have any children. Usually you go to the saint and you go, Swamiji, please bless me with children. My wife doesn't have any children. Please bless us that we can have a big family. And the Swami goes, very good, very good. Yeah. Very good. Ayushman Bhava. Live a long life, have a lot of children. He went to Lord Chaitanya. He said, please bless me, I'll never have any children. He said, your disciples. He said, I can't trust if I have children whether they'll look after the deity or not. But you and your disciples, I know that it's so strong. The disciples of your disciples will look after. Oh dear. So much to say, so little time. So Lord Chaitanya came to Jagannath Puri. He wanted to be not too far away from Sachimata. He came to Jagannath Puri. Jagannath Puri, we don't hear this very often in our tradition because we're not a deity-centered tradition. You know, we're not really a deity-centered tradition. We're a Harinam Sankirtan-centered tradition. That means we can send our devotees to, you know, Sheffield or Grimsby or Hull, and our devotees, we know that they'll be safe because they're fully taken shelter of the holy name of Krishna. Prabhupada said you can have perfection just with this picture of Panchatattva, just with a picture of Krishna and your beads. He said you can have perfection in this lifetime. But in other traditions, they place more emphasis on deity worship. So you would always have to be close to the deity. I'm in Vrindavan, I'm never going to leave Vrindavan. I'm in Jagannath Puri, I'm never going to leave, like that. So, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had looked after Lord Chaitanya, and then the Lord had gone on his travels. Prataparudra said, I heard that there was a wonderful sannyasi here. Why did you let him leave? Why did you let him leave? You know, I really want to be with sadhus at this point in my life. You know, I passed middle age, I want to be with sadhus. I want to deepen my spiritual life. And he was such a majestic, wonderful person. Why did you let him leave the town? And Sarvabhauma says, well, he had to travel. He was on his way to Rajmundry to meet Ramananda Roy. So you could have kept him here. He said, well, I kept him here. If you facilitate, you know, he needs a place to stay. And so then he turned to Kashi Mishra and said, well, can you help him? So if you go to the Gambira today, you will still see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's quilt, his blanket, that he kept himself warm in the wintertime at night. You'll see his sandals, you'll see his water pot, his bed, they say. Of course, unfortunately, these are in a state of not museum quality, we should say. Not exactly museum quality. They haven't been looked after particularly well, but they're still existing. They're still existing there. So after the incident with the lady in the temple, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became somewhat inconsolable. He came back and he said, my mind has become like a yogi. What, my lord, what do you mean by that? He said, well, my mind is like a Kapalika Shivite yogi. He said, a Shivite yogi, Maharaj? What are you talking about? And he said, and everybody knew how they dressed. If you're a Shivite Kapalika yogi, you have one earring, a conch shell earring, big, sometimes a big hoop in one ear. He said, yes, my mind has become just like that. He said, and right next to my ear is the ring of the rasa dance. And this earring is pulling me. And my senses, my 10 senses, have become like my disciples. So this is pulling me by the ear. The descriptions, beautiful descriptions of the rasa dance are pulling me by the ear. And my disciples are all coming with me. So he was describing. So then, the great discovery is that the rest of my class notes didn't make it out of the computer. There was 4 pages. We haven't made it. So, what do you do now? Think quickly, Kripamoy. Just fake it. They'll never notice the difference. Okay. Oh, I know what it was. I was going to turn to Shastra for help. That's right. So then we go to the Antilila, volume 4. And that one is done. So then he begins experiencing these emotions that we talk about. And devotees, they say good night to him, and then they wake up sometime, and early in the morning he's not there. Lord Chaitanya has left the Gambira. And he left the Gambira and was found near the Singhadwara gate, the main lion gate of the temple. And they found him lying on the ground. It's not a long distance, but it's enough of a distance to make them worried. So then they began locking the doors. And there's 3 doors. And again, 3 locked doors. They found him outside. And there are 3 or 4 manifestations that took place during this time. We have these manifestations where they came and they saw that Lord Chaitanya's limbs had become separated, and in between the different limbs, it just seemed as if there was just skin. How is it possible for someone to be alive in this condition? So his body had extended to great length because there was inches in between one limb and another. On another occasion, they came and his body, all his limbs were inside his chest. So they would take him home and they would recite verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. And then on another occasion, They had to go out at night with a lamp looking for him everywhere in the streets. So what to do? So they put a servant in there with him. And the servant would cover the Lord with a blanket. And when the servant woke up in the morning, sometimes he would find that the Lord was gone and he was wearing the blanket. And so on another occasion, he started running towards the place called Chataka Parvat, which is a sand dune. He was running towards it thinking that it was Govardhan Hill. On another occasion, he ran into the ocean thinking that it was the Yamuna. And there was a fisherman in the ocean who brushed the body of the Lord. He thought he'd caught a big fish. He was very happy. And then the body of the Lord brushed against him, and he felt as if he'd been, it was spine tingling. Hari, 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 I think, touched by a ghost. So all these different manifestations took place from this Gambhira. Sometimes the Lord's feelings of separation were so great that he would rub his face against the wall, causing bruising. The devotees became inconsolable. How are we going to deal with this? But in this room also came the only piece of writing that we have from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. From all these ecstasies, it all boils down into this one piece of writing, which is 8 verses, the Sri Shikshastika, in which the entirety, everything, from Radharani's speaking to the bumblebee, from Krishna's rasa dance, to Krishna departing Vrindavan, to the highest manifestation of feelings, to the beginning of sadhana bhakti, or I should say from the beginnings of sadhana bhakti, all the way through to the highest feelings of love for Krishna. It's all in just 8 verses, these 8 masterful verses, 8 supreme verses, the Sri Shikshastika. So we can study these and talk about these and comment on these ad infinitum, because the entire philosophy is there. So they are, if we want to be in the Gambhira with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we read these verses, and that will encapsulate everything that he was experiencing. And hopefully we'll begin to, by the chanting of these verses, put it into practice in our own life. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. There was so much to read, so much to discuss. I'll take one question, just one, and we'll have a short break, and then we'll come back tomorrow morning at 7:30, because tomorrow is the day. Am I right? Tomorrow's the day? Okay. Good. You can see how much. Every year I make the Vaishnav calendar. That's the last time I look at it sometimes. Yes. Oh, you had a... Yeah. Was it you? You got the microphone.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So if everyone has a slightly unique type of love for Krishna, did Lord Chaitanya experience it all? Was Krishna satisfied with that?
Yes. You see, because he is Krishna himself, it's like Krishna manifests Radharani. In the beginnings of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada says, Radharani is Krishna. You don't often hear Prabhupada say that. He said, Radharani is Krishna. And you see, because Krishna has manifested himself as Radharani in order to completely experience the full limits of Hladini Shakti, the full limits of the pleasure-giving potency. So Krishna is everything. But he manifests himself in different persons who then serve him. But the sun manifests the sunshine, but the sunshine is always dependent on the sun. So all of the manifestations of Krishna, they are dependent on him. The other thing is that when the sun manifests the sunshine, there's a big difference in appearance. One is a big ball that you can see if you look in the sky, of 11,000 degrees centigrade, and the other is, you know, a few photons that reach you on your face. But the difference between, so there is a sun, and then the manifestation of sunshine is different, is a different energy. You can't say it's exactly the same as the sun. But when Krishna manifests, parasya shakti ravividaiva shruyate, when Krishna manifests energies, they're all personal. In other words, it's like a person coming out of a person. We used to have that painting. I think it was not good. It wasn't a good painting for brahmacharis. But it was, who was it? Cupid trying to tempt. No, who was it? Oh, anyway, the point is that the incarnation of the Lord was manifesting thousands and thousands of Cupids who are all coming out as persons. I forget. So when we talk about Krishna's energies, we shouldn't think that we're just talking about rays of light or X-rays or infrared or ultraviolet rays. Now that's the sun that we're talking about. When Krishna manifests energies, they're all personal. So Krishna manifests. So when the next question Prabhupada says is, when did Krishna manifest all these energies? Was it that Krishna was kind of alone in the universe, you know, some kind of cosmic being, and then he manifests all these? No, it's eternal. But you just said that Krishna manifests all his internal potencies. Yes, Krishna is the beginning. But when did it happen? No, that's not the question. Well, it's my question. Yes, but it's not a very good question. Because everything about Krishna is eternal. And when you're conditioned, time-bound, the question is always, when did it happen? But when we talk about Krishna, we cannot talk about when. See? That wasn't your question. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu experienced all the full range of emotions. All the full range of emotions. It's true. Because, you see, he even manifested, even enjoyed, he even got to enjoy, Lord Chaitanya got to enjoy not being a devotee of Krishna. And enjoying the experience of becoming a devotee of Krishna. How about that? Because everybody knows that's a very joyful time, isn't it? You know, even at the GBC meetings this year, the SGGS, the first question put to a room full of sannyasis and gurus and GBC members is, how did you come to Krishna consciousness? So very excitedly, like children, they started telling each other the story, how I came to Krishna consciousness. Because it's the most joyful time. You're in darkness and someone switched on a light. Okay. And we always remember who it was, where it was, when it was, and how we felt. So we cannot deprive Lord Chaitanya that experience of becoming Krishna conscious. So he undergoes that experience himself. He goes to Gaya, he meets Ishvara Puri. And whereas before, he would laugh at Advaita Acharya and the devotees when they were doing kirtan. How about that? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the very person who's come to give Harinam Sankirtan, he's these people. You know, don't they know any logic? They should be studying philosophy. Then he comes back and he's crying tears as he's chanting, and then it all begins. And when it begins, it really begins. It's not long before they're having huge kirtans at Srivas Thakur's house. I'm going to finish after this one because people always say I go over time. I don't know any limits.